Well, I had a number of questions here about the early days. I wanted to ask you some more about Taylor and Drury's.
Oh.
When did they first set up their post at Little Salmon? Were you here then?
Before I came here. About a year or so before I got here. It must have been coming in 02, I think.
At Little Salmon.
Mm.
Were both partners there in the beginning?
Hmm?
Were both of them there?
It was run by a man by the name of McCauley.
Mm-hmm. They built the post there, or did they move into... Did they buy someone else out?
Huh?
Did they buy someone else out?
No. Mm-hmm. I was just... Mm-hmm.
What sort of a guy was McCauley like?
McCauley? Oh, he was a big fella, wasn't he? Pretty low. Well, I don't know what you call him. He wasn't much what you call very clean in his habits and things like that. But he was a good man amongst the Indians, what I mean to say. He's in love with the Indians, and he could do business with the Indians, and nobody else could.
Why was it hard for other people to do business with the Indians? Were they pretty hard to...
Well, the Indians, you see, were camped there. There was the Indians there. There were no Indians here then. The Indian camp was a little salmon. We never see any Indians here. The police post here with four policemen, and Indians never came around where the police were or made any camp at all. And it's never known, with never any Indians here at all. Not camped, there was always a little salmon, and there was a few at Big Salmon. But the Little Salmon, that's where the majority was, and Selkirk.
Mm-hmm. I see. Was there a lot of demand for fur at that time? Is that
No. I caught it. But I never did receive anything more than about $5 a link. And about the same price for red fox. I sold all kinds of link at $5. The most that ever I did find in my trapping days was $21 per link, and that was in 1910, I guess.
1910, that was about when you got started trapping full-time?
Eh? When? About the time that I started to raise foxes.
Oh, I see.
A little later, around 12, perhaps.
When was it you left the police? What year?
'08.
'08. Oh, I see. Was T&D's offering credit at that time?
Huh?
Was Jack McCauley offering credit to the people at that time?
Indians?
Yeah.
No, he didn't. Well, they might have given him a little credit. I don't know not much about that part of the business. All I know that the Indians in those days used to get out and trap when they come in the spring, and that's when they got the bell. Whatever they've already got. But, they give Indians credit and keep them on the books. That pays. When one Indian gets on the books, he stays there. And so he's never off the books. He's always owing something. But Taylor and Drury at the Pelly, they used to use What do you call that money, they? Their own money, they.
They had their little tokens, eh?
Huh?
They had tokens.
Yeah.
You think they were pretty fair to people when they were buying?
No, they're not fair. I couldn't meet you halfway. They done the same with me. I got in here with old Drury, the race boxes, and I had to kick him out of here. Damn man was shipping boxes, tins to him, and he was sending them to London, and he wasn't telling me anything about what he was getting for them, one thing or another. I wasn't going to stand for that. And I told him that I'd be on my own. It was me that built the fox ranch, you see.
Yeah.
The first foxes we got, bought from an Indian for $500, two little silver grey pups. And we sold them at four for $4,000.
Who did you sell them to?
Huh?
Who did you sell them to?
Pew in Catlin or Carcross, wherever you go. Pew and old Simmons, he bought. He, George Simmons, he was buying for Pew. I sold him some or eight boxes too. This Pew was sending them down to Prince Edward Island for the fox ranches down there. He paid good money for foxes, whatever he got, the live ones, didn't they? And after that, because I got in army, I was in instruction. Well, I was doing pretty good. Till the Frome brothers, who were millionaires already, that's in the States, the big guy, they got started on with them, raising foxes. They built big places and running them wild. And of course it lowered the fox fur. The animals, not what they were raising, was pretty poor stuff. And it knocked the fox father, the fellas like me, out of it altogether. The foxes that I'd been giving $100 for, $150 or $200 a skin, and it wasn't worth $24 after they got through. So I couldn't raise foxes at $24. So I had to quit. And they had to quit too. They must have lost an awful lot of money, that bunch.
You mean back in when the foxes went down, like in the 30s, eh? Yeah.
Never did come back again.
No. Well, it's coming back now. It's coming back now.
Now, in the silver grey, I mean.
Oh, yeah, not so much.
That was the only fox I raised.
Yeah. Well, I understand in 1914, I think that was the year, they passed a law saying you couldn't ship foxes out of the territory. Do you remember anything about that?
No, I never know anything about that. In 1914.
Yeah.
I don't know where that law came in then.
They call it the Fox Protection Ordinance or something.
1911, 12, 13, 14. It never affected me anyway. I was shipping foxes.
Shipping live foxes out.
But I was pretty well through by. I was shipping foxes after 15 years, 1915 and 1916. Didn't old Black was there in part of the parliamentary gentleman.
Yeah, well, Black, he had a piece of a business in Whitehorse. I think it was J.P. Whitney. No, not J.P. Whitney. I don't know the name of the... Can't remember.
Whitney and Peddler.
Whitney and Peddler.
Whitney and Peddler were the store man there.
But they had a big fox farm in Whitehorse.
Oh, Whitney, yes, I did hear that. That's another thing that I turned old Drury down for. He was buying foxes for... I found out he was drying foxes for Whitney and leaving me without any.
Oh, I see.
No, I didn't thank you at all. No, Drury was a poor fellow.
There's another story I wanted to ask you. Was in 1925, there was a policeman here in Carmax who was complaining because the fox farmers here were using moose and caribou to feed the animals.
No policeman. I don't know who that was. I heard of something of that. Oh, no. I know what a funny thing. He never called on me. Then he complained to me. I complained about the police.
I see.
I forget his name now, it was here. Another. We went out there and shot a bunch of caribou and left them. She took a little of this, that, and the other, and took several caribou and killed them, shot them, and went.
Just left them behind?
They never complained to me about feeding caribou. I fed caribou all the way along.
Did you take out a permit to do that?
No.
Well, some of the people here did.
Some of the people here?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how it was after they did then. But that's when the caribou was gone. And that's the last of the caribou. They never came again. They did used to come about every 20 years. I've seen them twice, and no more. Well, they come now, a little few, but way out in the Catherine country, out in the Nansen country and be there. But they never come around here. They used to see thousands of them around here at one time.
Well, did you, when you started trapping, did you leave the fox farming then and go trapping, or were you doing them?
I was trapping before I was fox farming.
Oh, I see.
I trapped through the old Chiku country. That's the old trail. It's about a mile this side of the Twin Lakes.
Yeah.
Coast of the Lodge.
Right.
That's where they used to come over in the old CD days. That's Canadian development people.
Yeah.
Used to come over there in the winter time.
They kept their boats there, eh?
Come from that barge over there to there, into Montague. In those days, I was trapping a few there. And on the other side, that is the, where the Uchai River Valley comes in. On the other side of the lake, trapping throughout that country, and Montague itself. In those days, Montague used to be a good fox country. It is now, I think.
Well, maybe there's people back in there now.
Hmm?
Maybe there's people back in there now. They should be. The prices are so good.
Oh, there's nothing like it used to be.
No,
no trail then. Not only in the winter, they had a trail in the summer. And then river coming down.
Yeah. How big a trap line did you like to handle?
I don't like big trap lines. The furthest I went was the Monte, from right under Montague. And out on the other way, I'd guess about 30 miles altogether.
About 30 miles traveling? About 30 miles traveling total?
You got to go to it all the time if you're going to keep doing traffic. By the mile, out cold weather. You can't do nothing in cold weather.
How many traps would that be?
Oh, it wouldn't take so very many. Perhaps about... It's been running a long trap line. You don't gain anything by it.
Yeah.
You can't get over, you can't get around it.
You start losing fur.
Probably about 100 traps, but the rest of that I guess you. I done better on short line. When I was, I done better around here. When I was raising foxes, I used to trip out on a dancing trail and away. So I caught quite a number of animals in a short trap line. No, this is business is long lined. You can lose so many animals. And the poor devils are the things that flees. And everything attacks them. And these squirrels, ravens, and God knows what. And the wolverine around, he cleans them up too. It doesn't do. These Indians used to set out traps. I wouldn't go and look at them for about a month. All that there was a fox tail or something like that. That's trapping a sorry kind of business, so I'd give it up anyway. Cool. You stay, got a line of traps out and cold weather coming. 70 below, for instance, something like that. And you can't go over traps this weather as that is. Please, hurry. And it, when it wilds up, you go out and find some of the poor animals, froze, stretched out. Some actually curled up, froze solid. It's a horrid job. I quit it. I didn't trap them or raise them. I fed up with it.
Did you ever know a man named Wallace who was here in about 1941, who was trapping in here in 41?
I did. I was trapping here.
He got in a bit of trouble with police because he was taking muskrats.
Wally?
Wallace, yeah.
What's his name?
Wallace.
Don't know it.
Oh.
He never was around here.
How about John Hawksley? Did you know him?
Mission man?
He was the Indian agent. Hawksley.
I know Hawksley, the mission man.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah?
That's the one.
That gentleman, I think him on a seashore. That's the man that was telling me a yarn about how he secured a fine double-barrel shotgun from an Eskimo. Yes, he was up in the mission, up in the, used to be up in the Mackenzie country. And he was telling me this Indian had a fine shotgun. And he just wanted that shotgun in the West Way. This is a mission man talking.
Yeah.
He said, but I had a knife. He says, knife would cost me about $1 or so. It was one of these that had corks going into it, chisel and one thing and another. He said, I suppose you've seen them going. Yes, said, I have. Scotty thing, yes. But he said, I took that out, he said, and I was pulling the things out, the chisel and showing, and he wanted it right away. And I swapped him this for the gun. I thought to myself, well, I said, that to me, I said, is a pretty cheap way of going about business. But he said, I in the Eskimo, he said, and I don't know if he had much use for it. And I said, I don't know, I guess he had less use for the knife. And I didn't tell all of that at all. These mission men have given me a pain ever since I know them. I had too much success about it. Middleton came to me once. He'd been to Little Salmon with his dogs, cold weather. There you go. And he came to me and he was telling me of this awful trip that he'd had. And coming back, he was so exhausted. And all at once he says, a beautiful white dove got up in front of me. Flew a little bird. Then flew again in front of me. Urged me on. He said, I felt greatly relieved. I said, wait a minute. He said, that yarn might go with some people who you can't tell me that. In the first place, he said, there's no such a thing as a white dove. Not in the wild state anyway. Never was. And as for the doves in this country, I said they couldn't possibly exist, especially in the winter months. And they don't visit us, no way. I said, what you saw was a ptarmigan. And that happens to me times out of number in the winter time and travelling. There's a bunch of ptarmigans, the snows get deep in the hills. They come down into the valleys. And a big bunch of animals. They get scattered out and someone rides it. And you're passing a fly in front of you. I said, that's what you saw. And I said, you ought to have known that. Said, but your head is always full of something else but that. You don't know even what's living around you. He got mad at that. But he said, we can't all be naturalists. No, she's a naturalist. Don't take a naturalist to know that. And he didn't like that at all. Well, he never come to me again, anyway. But he'd been telling people this down yarn, you know. That's how the beautiful stories in the Bible get going, I guess. Oh, yes, the mission men were nice people.
Did you know any of the other guys, like Bompas or Stringer?
Swanson was a damned liar, and I had to tell him so. That rat, I come putting the hanging one on his chin. I was pretty well with him. He come over here one day, and it was raining. Oh, it started to rain when he was here. So I said, here, you take my Macintosh. This Macintosh had been given to me by a lad who used to work for Taylor and Drury. He went to the war and he gave me this Macintosh and his fishing tackle. And so I lent him it. Well, it didn't come back, so he had it for 2 weeks. This is what I use myself. So I said to him, now he was already worked up for what I was going to say. I hardly got it out of my mouth. And he said, you didn't lend me anything. What are you talking about? I said, don't come it, man. You know damn well about it. You mean to tell me that you forgot about borrowing my... I never borrowed anything, though. No. I said, you're a damn liar. I said, that's what it is. But I said, I'm not a liar. You are, said I, a stinker, if you told me that you didn't take my Macintosh. But I never did.
Damn liar.
Hmm?
No Macintosh, wrinkled.
Yeah.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. They still call him that.
So he quit the country then, went. I didn't know where the hell he went, didn't care. He was as poor as a church mouse, and that was right there to sneak anything. And some of the yarns he used to tell wasn't fit for the red light district. Dirty skunk. That was a gink that was more holy than righteous. He was full of old.
Oh,
he's still alive, I believe. Somewhere in around Alberta. Mm. He'll come back here. Anyway.
What was his name? That's not.
Huh?
What was him? That man again?
Swanson.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Here's some. Previously, I'd have given some dogs, about two pups. Nice pups. Only one day I kept them cursing and going on and beating the devil out of these dogs. They had them hooked up. But I said, if I'd have thought you were that kind of a gink, man, you never got them dogs. Well, they said they won't go. Won't go, that's not the way to make them go. Would you go with a slashing like that? I told him, I said, a dog is a pretty intelligent animal. You're knocking the devil out of him. He won't be any good dog. He was cussing too and going on. Oh, he was a bad actor. Did you know him?
No, I didn't.
Oh, well, he didn't miss much.
No.
Then there was old Stringer. Always showing up at mealtime. Oh, a beautiful bunch. And there was another one came here. I seen him get off the boat, young fella. And I said, you're a stranger to me, really. He said, oh, I said, I'm a mission. I said, I'll be on there. Oh, I said, you come amongst the Indians, eh? Yes, he said. Well, I said, I don't envy a job. Well, a pretty hard job to get on with. Oh, he said, I have a system. Him. I said, I've heard all about them. Well, oh, go do it. I wish you luck. About a week afterwards, you know, a week or so afterwards, I went up there to see an Indian. Indian down from... That is when the Indians started to come around here. Is when the mission men came. And I said to the Indian, I said, how are you getting on with a new mission man? Oh, you mean go away? He'd go back to school. He hadn't been here a week or a year. That was the system he gave him. Yeah.
Well, you said you knew John Joe. Where did you know him from? Johnny Joe.
Oh, yes, I knew him when he was... He used to run a bunch of hunting days. He used to go out in that Nansen country once or twice. I was when he was a young man.
Oh, I see.
What's this?
Say, what's the name of that man that holds that property?
You mean old Johnny Johns?
No, not Johnny Johns, Johnny Joe.
Oh, I'm talking about Johnny Johns.
Oh, I see.
I don't know the other one.
Oh, I see, yeah. Well, John Joe has spent most of his life, he's lived there at McClintock Bay.
Oh, I wouldn't know.
So he didn't come down here.
Silver Standard.
Yeah. Johnny Johns was down there. I saw him not long ago.
Oh, yeah.
He was down here.
Is he Keck?
Yeah, he's 80 now.
Huh?
He's 80 now.
Hey.
80.
Head of Keck Corporation?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Keeble.
Did you hear anything about that story about how those men got shot at McClintock Bay?
Hmm?
when you came up here, you must have heard about that story about those men getting shot at McClintock Bay or McClintock River. And they got four fellas, and they took them to Dawson, and they hung three of them.
The O'Brien either?
No, not the O'Brien murder. This was two white men were going up a river, and the Indians shot at them, and they killed one and wounded the other one.
No, I don't know. Where did that happen?
That was in 1898. You didn't hear about it then? No. No, I see.
1898?
Yeah. I know that was before you came here.
No, 1898. No. I wasn't in 98. I was a bunch of Indian men shot in Whitehorse, old George Lane and them, the sectionary gang. That was the time of the First World War. There was a Russian employed there, and they were always getting on to him with one thing or another, and he went to run amok and shot two or three of them. He shot Lane. I think it was three or four of the session men.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I hadn't heard that story myself.
We got him hanging there.
Yeah.
Why those? But I was out of the police at the time.
How about Jim Boss? Did you know him?
Yeah. Jim Boss from the lake.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, Jim Boss was even outside Indian.
Yeah. Did you hear he had two wives?
No, I never heard. Oh, I did hear something about that.
Yeah. One time you told me that on your trap line you didn't see very many marten.
No marten around here.
Yeah.
No marten around here.
Was it the wrong kind of country? Wrong kind of country for them? Sort of the not enough heavy timber or something?
Well, I never found them. I see a marten trap now and again, but there was no good trapping for them. He was traveling. There was no real run of marten. You have to go out in the up of the West Lake, the West the tributary that comes in there to Four Mile Hill. Go up at the headwaters of that, and there's a few marten up that way, and there's a few around Little Salmon Lake. But of late, I heard that Burgundy had caught 8 marten away out here, 16 miles. That's something I never, up in the hills there.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that in my day I never knew. There was any marten at all. I never seen marten up there before.
Well, if you were going through the country and you were deciding to make some sets for something, could you say go after marten if you saw some in there? Like, could
it all
you?
Depends what the price are. The price at one time is pretty good, but now it's went down to about $7. One time they used to be worth $30, $40. Oh, it was Pelly country was the best marten country. You see, in the spring, the Pelly trappers used to come down into Selkirk. Old man Barr and a few more. And there used to be a man with the name of I forgive him, little man. He used to have the New York firm, the Furriers. He used to come, he used to buy them all up there, Martin and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Was that area ever cleaned out? Was that Pelly country ever cleaned out of Martin, to your knowledge?
Well, no, of course, it might get a setback when they're all trapping, but more, it ain't long picking up again if they left it alone.
Yeah. How long does it take to come back? A couple of years? 3-4 years?
Oh, yeah, it's going to be back in another. Oh, yeah, it's 2 or 3 years. It's like beaver. Now, this is the place. And it matters up here, and all beaver matters. At one time, they used to have beaver canals and everything in it. They're all filled in now. But at one time, the beaver had been caught all pretty well all out of there. And they come back again after 2 or 3 years. I caught quite a number of beaver up there in years ago. But then we got trapped out again. They're back again now, I think, the beaver there. And nobody's troubling them much, I don't think. Bank beaver more than anything. There is a venture of a beaver. The beaver has become 11 miles this side of Braven. Back on the river there. There's a beaver dam there and everything. Beaver colony. They're building houses too. That's been there for years. It was there at my time. I never troubled them at all. They used to flood the old valley out there at one time with a dam. There yet. So, yeah.
Yeah. You told me about a trip you made one time.
What?
You told me about a trip you made one time from going from Hoochai to Carmax to vote. Can you remember telling me that story?
What?
Well, it was really cold. It was one winter and it was really, really cold. And you were traveling with a dog team from Hoochai to Carmax because you were going to vote in Carmax. Maybe some election or something.
Oh, yes.
And you were telling me about how hard it was to travel when it was really, really cold.
Good God, yeah. Oh, that was. I left Braven to come to Montague. Me and Walker. It was 60 below when I left there. I got down to 4. I got into Montague and it was 70 below, 75 below. At night. I traveled home, oh gee. I got within about. Walker, he was freezing, his nose and back of his hands. But I was all right. Got as far as the lake there. And it just like pulling through salt, and I had quite a load on. So I just ditched the load and went for it and got into Montague pretty easy. I couldn't take it any longer. I went back next day and got it. Well, then we had to come in here, and I wasn't coming in here with dogs. No. No, it's a boat.
Oh, I see.
So I left the dogs there with a stableman, and a stage happened to come along. And it was travelling going north, and it's cold weather, and they had to get through. As a rule, they don't run. He wanted to get through for this election taking place here.
Oh, I see.
And so I come with them. Me and the an old Chuck Hawkinson who ran the road here, and Walker, we come down here. I got down here in the road house and hadn't been there long, and in comes old Drury and Jack McCauley. They come from the Little Salmon. Old Drury just about close to I was voted. And we had to stick around here for a little while, and to the day too, and when it broke, I went back again. But Lord gee whiz, all for a vote, I'd never do it again.
Can you remember what year that was?
Oh no, let me see, that was the...
Nine.
He had to because, you see, the Indian general, yeah, a year after
that.
Yeah. He died and he left a wife. The next man had a wife. How was it all
eight? Well, that's how he it's easy to find out, I think.
Yeah, one or the other.
Yeah.
He had a roof and
a little fellow. A boy.
Oh, Bob Lowe. He was up but he lost his deposit. Bob Lowe from Whitehall.
Yeah.
You've heard of me, have you?
Yeah, I know that name.
An old blacky one.
But she took a fancy to.
This was the election for the MP, eh?
Hmm?
This is when Black won for the first time, eh?
Yes. Yeah. So he was down here, Sam used to come quite often. And I said, I'm surprised you're going to let your Ruth marry that George Charlie. So, oh, no, he said, I wouldn't allow you to have her. He said, the other one. Oh, my. That George Charlie, he was so smelly.
When you were trapping, you must have used a dog team. Where did you get your dogs, and how much did they cost you?
Didn't cost me very much.
Mm-hmm.
I fed them fish for them in the hall. Braven. When the whitefish were running, they ran up into the mouth of that river. I used to put a net across it and ease in. Keep it up off the water. And then a rope on it, and as the fish ran up the river, I'd pull the net down into the water, and it rushed back again. And I catch about 600 pounds in about 3 nights.
Oh, I see.
Then I fed them what I used to, link and all that kind of stuff, he'd get them boiled up.
Did you breed your own dogs, or did you buy them from people?
Bred them myself.
Mm-hmm.
We go down to about 100 dogs, I guess. I was running around the field for about 50 years, trapping, I guess.
Well, we're just about out of tape on this one side. I wanted to ask you about poison.
I don't do it.
No, I know. You told me once you never used it, but did other people around here use it?
Yes. I've known them use it. I know when I was in the police, I was at Tequila. The Tamina old gink there, loaded down with big number 4 traps, and he was going to play for Tickle Hell.
For what place?
We were going to play particular arrow trapping and whatever.
Oh, I see.
And he was using poison too. And he got down the river. I took a walk down there. And I see some of his sets. He had poison, a chunk of tallow or something on a stick stuck in the snow a few inches above. And the rabbits were awful thick that year. But God, he was a poisoned a thousand rabbits, I think. And never caught a thing. And setting these traps around. Number 4s. Big enough for a
wolf?
Black bear. Yeah, he was a great one.
But that poison was illegal, eh? The police used to watch for it?
I don't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
No. No, that's something I never knew. Damn stuff. It tainted as if it was poisoning whatever of an animal. Whiskey just get hold of it. And they die, and then squirrels get it. And all kinds of things get hold of it. And die out of it all.
So it kills everything?
Ravens, eh?
So it kills everything then?
Yeah.
December 5th, 1978, interviewing Mr. Frank Golder at CarMax, side 2, tape 1, and this is Rob McCandless. I wanted to ask you about some more people. Did you know an Indian agent in the 40s by the name of Jack Meek?
Who?
Jack Meek?
No. Jack Meek.
Meek, yeah.
No.
Oh. I think he came here in about 1945. G.I. Cameron, I guess you know him, eh?
Cameron?
G.I. Cameron. Cameron?
Yes, I know him.
Was he around here a lot? He was around here a lot in the 30s and 40s, wasn't he?
Yeah, I forget just when he came into the country, I don't know. But it must have been someone in him. In the 20s, I figure.
Yeah.
Yes, I know Cameron. He's run in the river here for years. He belongs to the division, the Dawson division.
Yeah.
But he used to run a little boat here down on patrol. He used to come this far. And the family went into, got married, and they lived at Selkirk. That's where his daughter was born.
Yeah. But then he quit that, and he went to Whitehorse, and he was going to become the director of game, the head of the game branch. But then he didn't get that job. Did you remember that at all?
No, I didn't know that.
Oh.
That's his after he left the police.
Yeah.
He was down here when I, with the policeman, when I, my birthday, 100th birthday.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Oh, I know Cam well.
Yeah.
He used to call me all the time.
When they were making changes to the game laws or to the game ordinance, did people generally know what they were doing when they were changing the game law?
I don't think they knew a damn thing at all about it. When they associate pheasants with a spruce forest, that's what they did, eh?
Mm-hmm.
There's something wrong with them.
Yeah.
Because a pheasant can find nothing in a spruce forest to live on.
Yeah.
He's got to have a dish. Trees like the beech and things like that that shed little beech nuts and things like that, acorns, oaks, and bracken. They want bracken too,
yeah,
to make anything of pheasants. Pheasants you see in the old country, all kinds of them, but it's always in places where either the beech or the acorn. And things like that are going. All over the seat of one, just things as blackberries and hawthorn berries and things like that. But to associate it with that fellow turning them loose in this country is nothing but damn cruelty.
Yeah.
There's nothing in the fox forest that grows underneath a fir tree or a spruce tree that satisfies or is anything like food to a pheasant.
Yeah.
None at all.
Because it's a seed eater. It's a seed eater. No, one guy was telling me that he's seen pheasants in the prairies, and they get so far north that, and they freeze. They start losing toes.
Yes,
they're frozen off.
You can get them in the prairies, in them little bits of coves where the deciduous trees grow. These trees is the, well, that might be acorn or whatever it is, in various places throughout the prairies. The pheasant thrives all right. But I don't know if he thrives all right, but it is. Of course, in the old country, the pheasant there is raised more or less with under the chickens, you know. There you collect it and then they're all on their own estates, they got the pheasant. The keepers looking after them. When you take an hard winter in the old country, they have to be fed too. Although they're a pretty hardy boy. The old English pheasant, now is just about done. Although it resembles the old Chinese or Mongolian pheasant, which he got mixed up with. The old English pheasant has got no ring around his neck. But the Chinese one has, and that's the only difference in them,
as far as I can see.
But the old English pheasant is just about bred out now, I think. I think it's pretty well all of the Chinese type. Chinese is where the pheasants come, they hail from in the first place. And the beautiful birds, some of them, we take the golden pheasant there that comes from there. And that, there's another one, very handsome bird, comes from China, as a pheasant family. The people up here get mixed up, there's old Fred Mack, that really knew all about birds. He would insist on calling the ruffled grouse a pheasant, but it's not a pheasant at all. We got no pheasants in this country. Everything gets where the tarsus or the leg is feathered right away down to the toes belongs to the grouse. Therefore, we have no pheasant. The ptarmigan is a grouse. The Franklin grouse, or what they call a Canada grouse, and we got several of them. And the Sharptail grouse, several grouse. And the big blue grouse, blue. But there's no pheasants.
Yeah.
Pheasant is clean, the leg is clean. There is no feather on the leg at all.
No, that's the gang that brought the elk in, too.
Huh?
That's the same bunch that brought elk into the country, too. And they haven't done very well, either. They let those elk go near Braeburn about 30 years ago.
What was it mean?
They brought some elk.
Well, that's another thing.
From Alberta.
Yeah, that's another thing. That's it. Well, the elk, of course, I don't know much. Well, I think he's more of a... You call him the elk. He's not an elk.
Or Wapiti.
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 He's a relation of the old Scotch red deer, the English red deer, very much alike. An elk is a thing like a moose or a caribou with palmated horns.
Yeah.
That's the elk. Anything with antlers is deer family. And anything with a palmated horn, that is the white horns and things like that, the scraping snow off one of them. They're the elk. The elk proper is the moose and the caribou. They're elk. It's hard to people to understand that they're. I seem to think that's something or other, I don't know. Of course, they take it from the old country. It's like the robin they call it in there. The robin is a field fair, belongs to the thrushes, what you got in this country. Mm-hmm. But he's got a red breast, and the old colonists, seeing that, they call it a robin.
Yeah.
But the robin is a little fella. Little Bob Robin, who's the English one, he's about, well, he's one of these robins here and makes four robins.
Yeah.
He's a little chap.
Does the English robin have a blue egg as well?
Huh?
Does the English robin have a blue egg? A
bluish egg, yeah.
It does, yeah.
But it's in a family of his own. And he's neither. I don't think he's got any relations at all. It's like a center, it's more. Or the edge sparrow, they call it. But I don't know. However, this is a field bear. It's a bird here where it belongs to the thrushes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's several of them now. When you see that bird feeding, you'll see him going through the antics as our old country blackbird or thrush, or missel thrush. We have two thrush in the old country, the missel thrush and the song thrush. The song thrush is a beautiful songster, and our blackbird too. But they're all thrushes. In the winter time, coming over from Norway and Sweden, we have the fieldfare. And the redwing, they're thrushes. They come in the wintertime into England, you know, where they're feeding on the hawthorn berry and whatever. But you can never mistake them, they're all the same. They run and they look, they're all the same. You can always tell whether they belong to the thrushes or not. Now, we have thrushes in this country, but a smaller bird, it's a different family. Although they call them thrushes, and they look a good deal like thrushes too, speckled breasts. But they're smaller.
Well, what kind of a bird is the grosbeak?
Grosbeak?
Grosbeak, yeah.
Which one do you mean?
Well, there's a grosbeak that comes around our place now this time of year. There's bunches of.
Oh, that's the pine grosbeak.
Oh, I see.
He's the big fella.
Yeah.
He's around here too.
Yeah, you've got him here.
He comes now just about this. He makes a partial migration. They come down in dozens, perhaps, and you see them. They come around here feeding on the rhubarb seeds and things here.
Yeah.
He's a fine big bird. He's supposed to be a good songster, although I never heard of him.
Yeah.
There is a good songster here. That's the white crown or white wing crossbill. You see him feeding on the fir cone. See the fur cone.
Mm-hmm.
Those big flocks of them. Have you seen them, have you?
I think I have.
That's a pretty handsome bird, the bird. The beautiful songster, too.
What's it called again? What's it called again?
It's white-winged crossbill. It's bill crossed. There are several crossbills, but that's the only one I visit here. But the beautiful songs, I got into quite an argument with old Ingersoll, the naturalist that used to write for the Family Herald years ago. He had it down as an ordinary song, just a mere twittering.
Mm-hmm.
But I know different. It's a bird that breeds early. By June, it's got its young flowing. It is then what the males sing. They're wonderful singers. They're prolonged singers and quite canary-like. So I wrote about it. And some woman backed me up in northern, in the northern part of Saskatchewan. She'd heard them too. So we had to give way to it. I got him on two or three birds.
Hmm.
I got him on the siskin. He was saying that the siskin resembled the Norse shape, the British one, but it doesn't. Our siskin is a good deal prettier bird than that. Our siskin we call it the Isle Canary of Scotland. He comes south and he's got a yellow breast and black head. But this siskin here, all the time I've been in this country I've only seen him twice. They come like like the Cusfields.
Mm-hmm.
They feed two on the, more or less on the seeds of it.
What did you call that bird again?
Siskin.
Siskin.
S-I-S-K-I-N. And, but he's nothing like the European one.
Mm-hmm.
No, he hasn't got the yellow breast. He's got a yellowish breast with streaks running down it. He's a pretty humble looking bird. Only twice that I've ever seen him.
Hmm. Oh, there's a friend of mine in Whitehorse who studies, who is, you could call him a student of birds, you know.
Hmm?
One would call him a student of birds, and he's very interested in birds, and I'll mention this one to him and see if he's seen it.
Oh, yes, a bird.
Mm-hmm.
But the birds, it's very surprising that people around in this country, but no one bird around that. Even the common little sparrows we have about half a dozen different sparrows. But they don't seem to know anything about them. The waxwing, too, is a bird. The circumpolar.
Yeah.
That waxwing is, it appears in England, too. As the two waxwings, the common cedar waxwing, or cherry bird of the States, but the one that enters here is the Bohemian waxwing.
The what?
The Bohemian.
Bohemian, waxwing. Yeah.
They call it a Bohemian waxwing, but we've never seen in Bohemia. But it's a great bird. Mm-hmm. It had naturalist puzzle for years. But I found the nest of them, the first nest I found of the waxwing I found up around the canyon in Whitehorse, and there was a man introduced to me who was collecting bird eggs. Well, I don't like the business of collecting eggs.
No.
But I was telling him of it, and he wanted to get a clutch of them. And I told him, I said, I don't believe in taking them.
Mm-hmm.
But I did, I went out with him. And when they breed in the West Wing, you'll always find one nest, you'll find all more around it. I found about half of that nest there.
Hmm.
I got him a clutch of eggs. And one time, they bred on this flat, and they built a nest in the willows even before the leaves come out. And a more miserable nest, it's just a few sticks together.
Mm-hmm.
One thing and another, and I don't know, half of them ever sort of come to maturity, I don't think so.
Yeah.
But there we are.
I've had no luck in finding blue grouse at all. Where do blue grouse hang out? I've had no luck in finding them at all.
The big one?
Yeah.
Go on to the big thing in Carcross. Up the big thing.
Oh, yeah.
Up there. And there's also blue grouse. I've heard blue grouse honking out here about 8 miles around the hill. But the Carcross, there always was blue grouse up there, big for weather.
Yeah.
I've only shot one blue grouse since I've been in the country.
Yeah.
I shot them just outside of Whitehall.
Hmm?
One winter.
One of the big.
Yeah.
I saw one up here. Full of twice the size of a rough grouse.
Well, I was hunting with a fellow. I guess early October, and I saw a blue grouse then for the first time, but we had rifles. I wasn't going to take a shot at.
No.
It's a handsome looking bird.
It sure is.
Hmm.
It's a funny thing that pinto does. I remember one winter. It was a down thick. It had dozens of them all along that throughout the Morton's Old Valley there. All along, well, in flocks. They suddenly disappeared, and I've never seen them again in the country. That was a Shelfdale goat. It resembles a good deal of a prairie chicken.
Oh, yeah.
What they call a prairie chicken. That's another goat. That's the pinnated goat. But this resembled a good deal like them. And I've never seen any more. But you introduced pheasant into this country. Where is that? I thought that was the dandiest thing imaginable.
Well, I know that they tried to do that in 1945. They did it near White Horse. But it was before that, eh?
Oh, it died out.
Oh, I know that.
It was Cameron I was telling about it.
Yeah.
He was the first one to tell me about it. I told him they can't experience it, and they didn't. They can't live there. They were just keeping going. They want not only good trees to roost in, but they like the bracken, the fern, what we call bracken, which grows so thick in the old country. That gives them cover too, you see. All that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They're left in the open. There's nothing ever goes underneath the coniferous tree, like the spruce and things like that. Nothing ever goes underneath them of any good. That was a damn silly thing. I don't know who the ginkgo that started it.
Somebody from Alberta, I think.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, the people from Alberta, they came up and they had all kinds of bright ideas. They had all kinds of bright ideas.
In Alberta?
Well, yeah, they came up here and they thought that this place was something, because it looked like Alberta, they thought that they could maybe introduce the same animals.
There were quite a bunch of birds there visiting.
Yeah.
I know that. I rode through Alberta years ago. Before it was anybody farming much there, all three trees would care very I went with old Minto. I was on his escort. We went up with what is now Edmonton.
Yeah.
There was a few shacks there. There was nothing there. And we went right through the Saskatchewan Valley, right to Battleford, right through that country. And a great place for waterfowl. I see there the pelican, the brown pelican, also migrates to that country. You're very clever, curious, and one or two more of the others. Billet, I bet.
I just remembered another man I wanted to ask you about. Did you know a fur buyer in Athlone by the name of Louis Scholes?
Who?
Louis Scholes.
Louis Scholes?
Scholes.
No, I don't know. Was he ever here?
I don't think he was here. But he was in Athlone about the same time that Clarence Sands was there.
Yeah?
You knew Clarence Sands?
Well, I didn't know him. He died there in Whitehorse some years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He's Sands. I know his people. He comes from Kingston on Thames, his people.
Yeah.
And Clarence, he's evidently in named after the street that the Sands of. I've got a big drapery store in Clarence Street, Kingston 10.
Oh, I see. Mm.
That was his parents. He left there the time of the gold rush. And got as far as that when I think it's Hankerdale. He married a woman, a Swedish woman. I don't know much about him. Mm-hmm. I just heard about him. I'd have liked to have met him.
Yeah.
But I never did meet him.
Another question about selling fur. How did you find out, or how did you get an idea of what the furs were actually bringing in London? Did you actually know? Did you have newspapers or anything coming to tell you?
Well, they see, Tame and Drury, they all ship their furs to Lamson's.
Yes.
That's how I come to that part of it.
Oh, I see.
Although I knew that there was a Lamson, the fur people in London, but I never had anything to do with them till then. I got them in Germany, too.
Well, were there people outside, fur buyers outside, who'd write to you directly? Who'd deal with you directly?
Tell me what?
Were there fur buyers and so on outside the Yukon who would to write to you themselves or?
Yes, and them kind of fur buyers you want to watch out for.
Why is that?
Oh, putting up the price, you ship it to them, you won't get what they put in there. The one outfit calling themselves Great North American something. Lord, I ship some meat there to them. And damn this thing is the price I got for them no more. No. No, sir. And it's no good trying to get them back again. You won't do that. Now, there's only one place to ship your fur to. That's the sales. They get the proper price for them. And if they don't get it, they won't sell them.
I see. I've
had folks laying about for about 3 years on that great big...
Oh, that's Western Canadian Raw Fur Auction.
Eh?
Western Canadian Raw Fur Auction.
I see.
For 3 years they kept them. They wouldn't sell them until they give a decent price for them. Yes, that's the only place to ship there. But to ship to anybody like these fur buyers, so they don't get on a make. Look at old Bill Drury. So they did he couldn't meet you halfway. Then he wanted to give it to him.
Well, the fur prices went, the way I understand they went is that they were quite high in 1919, 1920, and then they dropped down for about 2 years, 1921, 22.
What?
The fur prices, generally, like for fox and stuff. Can you remember?
Right in there, 1919, yes.
They were...
That's when I got the highest price, I guess.
In 1919.
Yeah, right. They did drop down too. I had a muskrat went up to $5. Dropped down again to about to nothing at all again.
That must have surprised some people, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And old George McDade, he had some. I had some. But I sold mine. I sold mine for about $3 a piece. But he was going to hang on to his because sooner or later he'd be getting $5. But in the meantime, they dropped down the night. He lost out.
Did you ever get any warning that the prices were going to go down, or did it just just happen?
They didn't say nothing about that. Mm. Well, that's the devil of worship. You can never bet on it. You couldn't. And now I think the pan has enormous prices for zinc. I think it's a poor skin anyway. That is, in a garment. Don't carry much leather. But I think the people are buying, paying these extraordinary prices for these links. They're getting them made into robes for wall decorations and everything. Wall robes, they hang on the wall. And I think that's what they're doing. Not putting them into furs, mate. But I don't know, anyway.
Well, I know that...
I know that the prices they're paying are not worth it.
Yeah.
And the tanning they do these days now, the tanner, the fella, he don't have tenderized. He uses an acid tan. And that acid has never done working. And on skins like a link, I give it about 2 years before he can put your fingers through it. Hmm. I know that tan liquor. That's an acid tan. I use it myself. I know what it'll do to a porcelain. It's all right for things like moose heads and sheep and things like that. But, I have heard it's not much.
Did you ever use formaldehyde?
Hmm?
Did you ever use formaldehyde or a chemical like that to tan fur?
No. Mm-hmm. And for the sulfuric acid, dispensed in salt, 1 gallon of water, 1 ounce of vitriol. Sulfuric acid. But for birds, you never use anything like that. You can use either just white alum or just white arsenic, and or you can make an arsenical paste of white ivory soap and arsenic.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing you can use is just common borax.
Yeah.
Common borax has boracic acid in it, and it's small birds and things like that, that's about as good as any. But to send these things to, like Reynolds just now has sent a sheephead to Ken, now he never wants to do that, but he's going to mount it. 10 yards in your way is different than your altogether. Besides, capes that you put on a mount of sheep heads and things, they don't want that kind of tanning at all. A good acid tanning is just for them, and that's all they do. You don't want to put them to pieces. But that 10 yard, we know what that'll do with them. They shape them. Not much shape to them when they get through with them, I don't think. Not much trouble in tanning for sheep heads and things like that. Royal gold, my dear, for dishes, at that time there were 7.5 inches. Now, you look at the price of milk. That's saying, what's going on just now? They call it an acid bath. A man going to hot countries like Africa, things like that, where they take a case, a leaded case, with this acid tan in it, And then anything they get, then they can put it into the acid bath, and it keeps it there. It's, yeah, that's good enough for the year, in that acid bath. You come out just the same as you put them in. But in a cold weather like country like this here, all you want to do with the sheep, and you eat them whether it's warm, is to salt it down and roll it up.
Mm-hmm.
And get the last way to get to bed. But in a hot country, they never last very long. If you don't do something like that. Smother it with blood inside and let it dry.
Mm-hmm.
That is a kind of preserve. And another way to think, you know, the niggers in Africa, when they make their crosses and one thing and another like that, these crosses are made of different little skins all sewed together. So they make that wood ash. Take them out and put the wood ash. It's good too.
Mm-hmm.
I use it up here on bear skins. When you've got a bear skin, you just kill. And it's a hard thing to flesh. Instead of letting it get flint dry, when it's in a wet state, pick it out on the ground and put wood ashes over it.
You mean like a paste of wood ashes?
Yeah, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then let it dry. Then shake it off and... Well, then your skin then will be a hash color, but it's preserved, it'll last indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
You see, ashes contain different things. That's one thing they contain is
potash.
Potash, and mm-hmm. that's preserved. And it's it neutralizes the gold fat on the stuff, and you put it over the wash and tore it a bit with a scraper,
mm-hmm.
and it takes all that off, and then it leaves you a pretty good clean skin.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it turns all the fats into soap.
Hmm?
I guess it turns all the fats into soap,
mm-hmm.
or something, so that they wash off.
Yes, yes. Now, mink he wanted in those kind of things.
Well, I was thinking about that. Well, when I was writing what I've done, I was trying to understand why all of a sudden long furs were no good. Like, during the 20s and 30s, long furs you could sell. Then after about 1945, 46, 47, nobody wanted to buy long fur. And lynx went down, fox went down, marten went down a little, not much. But muskrat and mink, and to a certain extent, beaver sort of held their own.
Well, all low, water-loving animals are the best when it comes to making leather.
Uh-huh.
Beaver, otter, and mink.
Because they wear well.
Eh?
They wear.
Mm-hmm.
But has lynx got a good leather?
Yeah, they start with in captivity.
Mm-hmm.
But as you keep them as long, the longer you keep them, the thinner the coat gets, the thinner the leather gets.
I see.
Did you say minks or lynx?
No, I was... Yeah, that's right, he answered for mink. But does lynx, does that make a good fur? Like a long-wearing fur?
One of the best of furs.
Is it?
Good wearing one, too.
Yeah.
I'm talking a wild mink.
Yeah, right.
An otter is another one, lasting fur, although it's not, well, it's too scarce to make any great silver.
Did you ever get any fisher up here?
No fisher here. Mm-hmm. I've heard of them in B.C.
Yeah. Once I read somewhere that if you were out and you got a bunch of wild minks, say, and if you were to match them up, let's say you had about 20, and you matched them up and say you had about, that some were, which were more or less identical, like all the same, they were big furs, they were about the same kind of a color, would you get more for them than you would if it was just, if they were all different?
Well, of course, the darker they are, the more they go to mink.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the finer. I remember old Bill Drury, got a bunch of mink from the telly there. And he had to take me over there to show me. And he was picking out the big fellas and whatever. I told him, I said, that's all very well, that there. But the best mink you'll get is a medium one more. If you take that great big mink, you've got a coarseness about it that you won't find on the medium one. And that's the skin that'd go better. You see these skins when they go to the furrier and eat it. Selecting them as garments, you've got the people to select them all looking alike. Well, then they cut down, split down, you see, and split ribbons like before they're tanned. And then they're tanned, you see. These ribbons are all sewed together again.
Mm-hmm.
That's to strengthen the skin, you see.
Yeah.
And it makes a better showing, too. And they all got to look alike, you know, to make sure. I've never done anything. I really did. A man that used to come to Selkirk, he used to be one of those. He was telling me about it. He used to live in there. He left that to go out on account of his health. Although he was working for the same firm. But he was telling me then he used to be a... I don't know what he called himself. He got a name for the man that Stevie said he was. To select me and write.
What was his name? Was that Louis Levy? Did you know Louis Levy?
Huh?
Did you know Louis Levy?
No.
Levy. I think he came out of San Francisco. He used to buy fur up here.
This man came from New York.
Oh, I see.
I forget his name. I've been knowing his name up for years.
Uh-huh.
But now I can't remember anything much.
No.
Down if I can. Memory's all gone there.
There was a trader there, you know, and I can't remember his name. And he had two little boys. And
the mink. Being a weasel, of course, like I used to raise ferrets when I was a kid, I never had any difficulty in raising mink, just about the same, all about the same, you see mink, you see you mate mink in, I used to say I mate all my mink in by the first of spring. It's the 21st of March. Oh, from that on, I go there. And the young appear, they know them blind and naked.
Mm-hmm.
And they ain't as big as, well, just like a big caterpillar to look at more than anything. Small little things. But they go awful quick.
Mm-hmm.
And they're 6 weeks before they get their eyes open. But it is then they start running around then. But you never see them before then.
Mm-hmm.
But they grow pretty quick. Well, the ferret is just the same. One thing you've got to guard against more than anything is fleas. Fleas can be fatal to all that kind of thing. And keep their nest box always well covered with sulfur. And you won't be troubled with any fleas.
You mean you sprinkle sulfur right into the bedding material?
Into the nest, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
See, they make their own nest. But you get now and then a runner that refuses to make any kind of noise and messes it all up, and he's all the time running. Well, you can bet he's not going to live on.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't. But then, he might get one in a dozen to do that. So but I generally clean around the nest to keep that all clean. And put the hay in there and always take it in and make a nest of it. In the winter time, though, you've got to keep on looking at them nests because the breath, like being warm, it forms a coat of ice on the top of it. So you have to keep removing that ice every now and again, putting new hay in. They're not a hardy animal altogether, not a mink.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, in very hard weather, you never find mink, right? But just as soon as the weather breaks and gets a little bit, you find mink, right?
Mm-hmm. I think I asked you this once before, but I think people had tried to raise marten, but they had no success at it.
No success at it.
Well, a marten is a weasel too, isn't it?
Yes.